We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Very special episode today. We're joined by Randy Wilkins, director of the Captain Derek Jeter documentary. Randy, just awful job with the documentary. I freaking hated it. So I'm here to lay into you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the intro and how much you hated it and still wanted to speak with me. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Have you ever gotten a gotcha interview like that where someone acts like they were a fan of your work and then's like, hey, man, I did not like that at all?
Nah, but there were a couple places that wrote like very trashy reviews of it. And it was very obvious that they just didn't like Derek.
Yeah.
So they just use that as an avenue to like just talk about the film. So I take that as a badge of honor. I appreciate it. You know, they still watch, they engage, and it's very clear what their agendas were. So, all that stuff is entertaining to me. I don't take it personally.
Were those the writers of those articles, did they happen to be in Boston or Queens?
One was in Boston. One was actually a Hollywood reporter. And I was like, you don't even... I mean, you're not even like a sports journalist. What's your problem with Derek? Couple from Queens, you know, a lot of tweets from people that represent that no-name team in Queens. So, but that's to be expected. You know, it's all good. They watched it anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
So a couple of things, man. First of all, just congratulations on landing the gig. This is like, I think as a Yankee blogger, a guy who's been in the space for a really long time, I know you were back with River Avenue Blues. You guys got the views from 314. You guys have a really awesome corner of Yankees coverage, highly analytical. I've been an admirer of River Avenue Blues for a long time. It actually was one of the reasons why I started Bronx Pinstripes many, many moons ago. So congratulations on that, man, because this is like, I don't know, it feels like a Super Bowl type of job with Derek Jeter. You know, he's the guy that we all grew up with. And I don't think I realized how much what he meant to my childhood and what he meant to just the backdrop of me being a Yankees fan until I watched some of this stuff. And I will say, the last episode, we've done a recap for every episode or every week. And this last one, man, you got me with the going back and forth with him and his dad, from the draft to the Hall of Fame. And I'm sitting there thinking of the relationship with my son, who's 5 years old. And it's like that connection is crazy. And that was the biggest thing. One of the biggest things I took away from this was the relationship that Derek had with his parents. And we all knew that because they were always in the stands. We always saw them, but that it was such an intimate, like strong bond between the parents. And I thought that was one of the coolest things because you really could tell why he is the way he is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you can't really tell this story without including Derek's family. I mean, they're very clearly the foundation of who he is, the type of man that he is, the way that he played baseball, the way that he viewed baseball. I mean, a lot of it traces back to his parents and his sister. And we said amongst ourselves that once we interviewed Dr. Jeter and Mrs. Jeter, that the film was elevated, that the film became special. Not that we didn't think it was going to be special to begin with, but they were so open and vulnerable and just emotional that it just created an emotional spine for the film that we were looking for while we were in production, and they provided it, especially his mom. So, I think that sequence with the Hall of Fame call and going back to the draft, I think it gets everybody, because now you've been through this journey with them, so you know just how much more it means, because now you have a glimpse of what their journey was together. So, very proud of that episode. I think also the inclusion of Hannah's struggles with her two pregnancies just adds on top of this theme of family that we were developing throughout the entire series. So, yeah, I'm very proud of that episode.
Hannah was very forthcoming about the struggles they went through. And that's something I'm curious if you had any hesitancy at all going into the project on the fact that Jeter might not be as open as someone could be in a documentary about themselves, because Jeter's been guarded his entire career. And it never feels like he lets anyone from the outside into his inner circle. I mean, that was also a big theme in the documentary. Hannah was very forthcoming, and I think Jeter even joked at one point, like, oh, maybe she's talking too much or something like that. She's sharing too much. Because even in a setting where he's being interviewed about a documentary about himself, I still feel like he's not 100% honest and open on some things. And that's just the type of person he is. I think he even probably said that's maybe a character flaw in myself. So I'm curious if you had any hesitancy going into this.
Well, first, I mean, he was honest. There wasn't a moment where he wasn't honest. Now, was he totally
open? I think there's
open?
One. I have one where I don't think he was honest.
Which one?
When he said, I did not have a problem that we were trading for Alex Rodriguez. I think he did.
Oh, no, I don't. No, I don't think he had a problem.
Okay. I mean, obviously, you're going to know better than me.
I think if they asked him to move off of short, he would have had a problem.
Sure.
But,
sure.
I mean, I think, you know, his position was his position. So if you want to come there and win, like, the one thing I learned about Derek, and this is from a lot of people also, I mean, like Brian Cashman all the way through to, you know, people that are his friends that had nothing to do with Major League Baseball. The one thing they kept saying was Derek is honest. Like, if that's what he thinks, that's what he's going to say. Like, he's not going to beat around the bush. So I totally believe him when he said he was fine with it. But I think the qualifier is because he didn't have to leave shortstop. Now, right, if they asked him to move to center field, he would have had a problem. But I didn't have any hesitancy because we spoke a lot before the project got going. You know, like, the very first time I met him was on a Zoom with him and Spike Lee, and we were on the Zoom for about an hour and a half, and we talked about it. Like, in order for this to be successful, you know, Derek has to open up a little bit and reveal things that he didn't before. And he was well aware of it. He knew that it wasn't going to work if he treated me like a beat reporter. Right. Yeah. So I had full confidence. I know the world didn't, but I was the one speaking with him. You know what I mean? So it's one of those situations where people are making assumptions, which are valid based off his career and how he treated the media and interacted with the public. But I actually had access to him. So it was something that we talked about multiple times. He was telling me stuff like within the first couple times I met him. The the complications with Hannah's pregnancies, he told me the second time I had ever spoken to him. So if he's telling me, he's comfortable telling the world, you know what I mean? Because we hadn't really built up a trust or a rapport that we have now. So I wasn't worried. There wasn't any hesitancy. I think when I first got the call, I did. But once I spoke to him, that went away pretty quickly.
Once you first got the call, you didn't have all those qualifiers, I assume. And you had to, for you to do this right, I assume that you had to have that belief that he was going to open up in certain ways. I'm interested to hear more about you and kind of your journey to this point, a little on the directing side as well. I think a lot of people know you from the Yankees world, but I'm very curious. I've seen some of your stuff, and I follow you on Twitter. Obviously, you mentioned Spike Lee. You've worked with him in the past. He came up. Can you talk more about like how you got to this point? And definitely want to give you your shine on your director's career, because it's impressive, man. The whole, first of all, the music. Thank you for bringing in the first couple episodes with the music. It was perfect. It was good. The blend of like 90s hip hop with Frank Sinatra at the key points. It's like only a Yankees fan knows how to blend that music, and hit those moments the way that they were. So hell of a job with that. But yeah, can you talk about your career, man, and on the director side?
So without going through like every detail and boring people, I had a tryout with the Kansas City Royals between my junior and senior year in college. And then right after that, a couple months later, I blew my knee out. So like baseball's out the window, whatever little chance I had with that. But my senior year in college, I needed to get an art credit. I kept dropping art classes because I was like, I'm not an artist. Like, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? And the only class that was available was a video narrative course. So I took that, and within 10 minutes of the first class, I knew immediately what the professor was telling me. Her name is Mary Haverstick. Yeah, she was an alum of the school. She was a working filmmaker, and she was teaching this class. And she just said, film is language. There's a craft behind it. And she started showing Spike Lee films. And within 10 minutes, I knew exactly what she was talking about. I knew what it meant. I could see it on the screen. It was almost as if I knew the language and didn't realize that I knew it. So fast forward a year or two later, I ended up staying at the school to work, and I met Spike. He actually came to the school and was a guest of the school for over the course of 2 days. And I ended up being his host. I had been doing some documentaries for the school, and I gave him a copy of the doc, and he watched it. And right before he left, I asked him, what do I need to work on? It's the only time I'm going to meet Spike Lee in my life.
You gave Spike Lee your mixtape is what you did. Yeah, basically.
So I was like, I'm never going to meet this dude again. I'm never going to talk to him again. Let me just see what he says. And he said I needed to learn how to make narrative films. And I was so green that I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, what's a narrative film? Not realizing it's just scripted. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know what that is or whatever, but I'll figure it out. And he gave me his email address, and he said, if you want to go to NYU grad film school, I'll give you a recommendation. And I was like, man, this dude is totally BSing me. Like, this is not real. Like, this is some fake email. So I emailed him right away, and he responded, and he was like, apply to NYU. So that was what I did for like the next week, because I had missed the deadline. I met him after the deadline had passed.
Yeah.
So fast forward, I got into NYU. Eventually they waitlisted me. So I had to wait the whole summer to get in. Then I got in, and Spike took me under his wing. So while I was learning directing at NYU, I was working with Spike. So I worked on Inside Man and When the Levees Broke and all those films. And I was honing my directing skills. And then eventually I just started working for Spike. I came up through, the post department with him, ended up being one of his editors, but I was still making stuff on the side. So I had my thesis film at NYU that ended up on HBO.
What year was this?
This is like I started NYU in 2004 and then I graduated in 2009. So when my thesis film was on HBO, it was around 2010. So I was working with Spike, but still like doing my own thing. I was making web series and doing different things. And then I think the thing that kind of like changed my directing career was actually directing Spike in the premiere episode of the Apple Plus TV show, Dear. And I think that when I did that, and it happened during the pandemic, so a lot of people were able to watch at the same time. Obviously, there was a lot going on in 2020, and I think that kind of just like changed the trajectory of my directing career, and then a lot of things started falling into place, and then the Jeter thing happened. I knew about Jeter right before Dear actually premiered. That was right when I had the phone call with Spike, but Dear clearly put me on the map for a lot of people directing wise.
That's such a cool story. Like, you think about the sliding door moments, like, if you had just taken that one art credit, just like a bullshit art credit, like, you might never have found your passion. That's such a fortunate thing, but also such a cool thing that's how it worked out. That's a really fun story.
Yeah. Also, I mean, if I didn't blow my knee out, if I didn't tear my ACL, like, we're not talking. Right. We're not here together. So
I don't know. Maybe you're playing in the majors. You never know.
Nah, that wasn't going to happen. I wasn't that good. It would have been cool, but I wasn't that good.
Yeah, you're riding buses in the minors, struggling.
Yeah, exactly. At the most. At the most.
Yeah, yeah.
But go ahead,
Andrew. No, I was just going to say, like, there were so many eye-opening moments in the documentary for me. And I think when Scott and I heard about this documentary before it even aired, we were talking. It's like, I hope we learn some things about the Jeter story that we didn't know. And you did such a good job at finding those things and sprinkling them throughout. Obviously, a lot of the baseball stuff, if you're a Yankees fan, you obviously know all that. But the ins and outs and the behind the scenes stuff was so cool. And to get Jeter to really talk about his personality and his character flaws, to me, was one of the most interesting things of the entire series, because that's not something I had heard before. You know, maybe you can think it, but like, to hear him talk about how he's an I told you so person, which I related to, and how he has a problem letting people in. Once they wrong him, he won't let them back in. And maybe he would have done some things differently with the whole A-Rod relationship. Maybe would have smoothed things over a little bit sooner or something like that. So I'm curious if there's anything that you learned from doing it about Jeter or about anyone related to Jeter that was sort of an eye-opening moment for you.
I didn't realize how much of an impact his biracial identity has on him and how he sees the world, because he really didn't talk about that stuff when he was playing. So I think understanding how that shaped his worldview, and again, going back to his parents, his mom being so open and honest about their experiences in Kalamazoo, like when she said that she wanted to leave after a year or two, I never knew that. I mean, that was never spoken about. And how it impacted all of them really shifted the focus of what the story could be in my mind. We didn't want it to be heavy handed where it's just like one sequence and then we like run away from it. We wanted it to be sprinkled throughout. But I think that was one thing that really, really changed my understanding of who Derek is, and this idea of him not being comfortable with people looking at him off the field, but when he got on the field, he wanted everyone to look at him, was probably one of the most interesting views of his life and career that I would have never thought of if we didn't do this. You know what I mean? So I think that immediately stands out. There are other things, but that's probably at the top of the list.
I think he said as he's walking down the street, people would comment, "What are you looking at? Who are you looking at?" He's always like keeping an eye out because
his sister would say that. Yeah,
because them growing up in Kalamazoo with a black father and a white mother, they were looked at that way, and so that certainly shaped how he ended up being able to deal with the New York media. I think Buck Showalter made that point in the documentary, and then obviously like a big moment with that was what Wally Matthews said. That Derek Jeter
has he shown his face yet?
Is colorless since it aired?
I think he deleted
Twitter.
Yeah, but I think he did that before. Okay, so full transparency, I contacted Wally before the episode aired to let him know that this was coming, because I was cool with Wally. I still am. I mean, he said it. I didn't put the words in his mouth.
Wally says what's on his mind. That's what he always. Yeah. That's what he's always done.
Right. So I gave him a heads up out of respect for him that this is in it. The Jeters respond pretty strongly. You are probably going to get criticized. I mean, it's coming.
Yeah.
So out of respect for him, I gave him a heads up. the thing with his Twitter, I think, happened before I even spoke to him. I think something else happened. I'm not sure what it is or was. I know Andrew Marchand probably had an issue with it because all of a sudden he started trashing the film like on the last night of the final episode, which just happened to be a week after the thing with Wally happened. But yeah, I mean, we're all kind of surprised that he said it. I was definitely taken aback. I wasn't expecting him to say that. And then
did he try and clarify what he was saying, or that was what we saw in the documentary was exactly how it played out on the interview?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he had clarified it, we would have included it. I'm not trying to make anybody look like a bad guy. I think that's
I'm not.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, because we asked follow up questions later in the interview, and then that's when you said the thing about, do we ask the president of the United States who's playing third base tonight? And the whole stay in your lane thing, that came after the colorless thing. So we tried to give him an opportunity to clarify or pull it back or explain what he meant, and then he kept going. So that was his view of it. You know what I mean?
But so to your point, it's not something that Jeter was very vocal about through his playing career. He's been more vocal about it, I think, towards the end of his career and his post-playing days, and talking about being the first African-American CEO of a Major League Baseball team and him making a point to hire minorities in high-level positions, you know, female general manager and things like that. So I feel like he's been much more vocal about it in recent years than he was during his playing days, because to your point, I mean, I was also, you know, 12 years old when I was watching Derek Jeter. Like, that wasn't on my mind. I'm curious, like, did he go, how many hits did he get tonight? That's what I cared about. I wasn't necessarily concerned with if he's identifying as black or white. But maybe if I was a little bit older in those days, that would have been something that would have crossed my mind.
And that was just, that was one of the things that he was not talking about. Like, the man kept the business between the lines.
Yeah.
I mean, he explains why he didn't talk about it. I think part of it was the culture of the time. I think the thing with Wally's comment is that he made an assumption based on the fact that Derek just didn't talk. Yeah. I mean, none of them spoke. So I think that the problem is that he took it one step further rather than just saying we didn't really go to him because he didn't talk about it. He gave the impression he didn't want to talk about it, which I think is totally fair to say. Yeah. But then it was like the next step that became the problem. You know what I mean? And just that terminology and that word is, you know, not the best one. So
awful word to describe, even if we're giving Wally the benefit of the doubt, which, you know, it sounds like you still have a cordial relationship with Wally, like just awful choice of words to describe what he was trying to say.
Randy. Yeah, and we even included Wally in the next episode to talk about the contract stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't trying to, I'm not trying to judge him. That's not my job in this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
How did this whole thing come about? Was it Jeter's idea to put this out? Because it feels like a lot of his views and a lot of his motivations have changed once he got married, once he had kids, and perspective has changed, I think. And I think in the last episode, when you hear from Hannah and you hear about the struggles they had, having the kids, your mind thinks differently. I know mine did when I have a son that's had some health issues, and you go to different places. You think about things differently. How much of this was him trying to put? And I know he did mention it, that this was a lot of it for his children. But was that the pure motivation in the beginning of this to tell the story so that he has this legacy piece and he can look back and reflect and his kids can point to something years down the road?
Yeah, that was the primary inspiration. He didn't come up with the idea. He was approached with the idea, but I think going through the Hall of Fame call, having that camera crew there and having his family there, his two daughters at the time, he has three now. I think going through that, he understood that, you know, there's something for his daughters to remember him by, because he always was like, what's next? What's next? Yeah, and he didn't have a record of it. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Yeah, I think his kids have a tremendous amount to do with this thing being in existence. And I think part of it, too, is the idea that he didn't chronicle his own career. You know, he didn't really take the time to think about things. And I think that's something that he always spoke about with his parents. But, yeah, his kids are the reason why this thing happened.
He did the one thing with HBO right around the time he had the 3,000 hits, but it was like a one-off thing. And from what I remember about it, I haven't seen it since it aired. It was pretty vanilla stuff that he was talking, because he was still playing at the time. So it was cool because we had never seen Jeter do anything like that before, but it was not nearly as interesting and in-depth as this series was.
Yeah, I mean, this one, he knew that this was going to be about him. And not like the chase for 3,000 hits, you know, that this wasn't going to work or really happen if he didn't reveal who he is and was, because that's really the point of the film. I mean, it's not really just to be a trip down memory lane or a Yankeeography. It's really like, this is who this guy was during these times.
Andrew, the relationship between Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez.
That's where I was going. So good.
You were in the room. And by the way, were you asking all the questions when Jeter, was that you sitting there? Okay. Yeah. In my head, I had you sitting there watching, asking the questions. What's your take on that relationship? And I thought it was super interesting at the end how Hannah vocalized her and like said, you know, give him a break. Like, he went through some shit. You know what I mean? Like, look at it from a different perspective. And have some fresh eyes on this and have a fresh conversation. I also saw that your tweet about not working with A-Rod in the future, that there was something there. So I'm very curious to hear about your take on that relationship and where it is today.
I mean, I agree with Hannah. Basically, Hannah vocalized how I feel about it. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's too long. You know, they're in their mid-40s.
Yeah.
I think that... one thing that's very important that Hannah points out is that Derek was a unicorn in the sense that he was extremely mature in how to handle the media than pretty much any player in the league. It wasn't just Alex. It was pretty much everyone. And I think that Alex didn't have that maturity when it came to dealing with the media. I mean, that's the case. So I think they had two different objectives. They had two different interests when it came to, you know, the personality side, or I guess the stardom side or celebrity side of being a prominent athlete. But at this point, I think they should just bury the hatchet. Like, I mean, it's going on for too long. And I think them being on K-Rod was one kind of small step in that direction.
That was awkward as hell, man. That was awkward.
Yeah.
Half hour.
I think it's awkward because we're all looking at them and then you have like a third party there. You know what I mean? Like Michael Kay's there and I think that complicates things. But yeah, I mean, basically Hannah captures how I feel about it now. I'm appreciative of both of them for being open about what was going on at the time, how they felt at the time. So yeah, I mean, I'm appreciative that A-Rod did it regardless of whatever like little thing we got into, which to me isn't that big of a deal. I know people are like losing their mind over it, but I mean, that's what happened. I'm just saying what
happened. Tweet something like that, people's minds are going to run crazy. I mean, if you're comfortable sharing, we'd love to hear what happened. But of course, if you want to keep it private.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it private just because.
All right, so I can concoct scenarios in my mind then.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I don't care. People can concoct away. The response doesn't bother me. Somebody asked me, well, actually multiple people were like, do something on A-Rod. And the first answer was, it won't happen. And then I explained why. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that was a follow-up tweet. But yeah, I'm appreciative that A-Rod did it. And that he came and that he was a part of the project. To me, that's way more important. Yeah, for sure. So
you can't tell the Jeter story without A-Rod. Did you get the sense that Jeter was, let me rephrase, the amount that A-Rod was a part of this and the relationship between Jeter and A-Rod, is that something Jeter was comfortable with? Or do you think maybe it was too much, too little? Like, curious about that whole dynamic because he was.
I think it evolved over time. I think when he first went into it, I think he just wanted it to be addressed like at one point and then move on from it. But that wasn't the history that they had. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is just me speaking. I don't think Derek realized how much of a influence Alex has had in his life. You know what I mean? Like, they've known each other for over 20 years. And they met early on. They had their conflict with the Esquire thing. And then all of a sudden he's on the Yankees. So there's no way that you can separate it and just like distill it to one moment. There were multiple moments throughout their career that have to be touched on because they're so intertwined. And I didn't realize how much they were intertwined until we started doing it. Like when you look back on it and you start chronicling it. I mean, yeah, you're right. There's no way that you can separate the two from one another. I mean, they're connected. So I don't think we would be doing the story justice if we just said, oh, okay, here's the Esquire thing, and then pretend like Alex disappears from Derek's life. I mean, that's not what happened. So, I think it's reflective of just their journey together, and it's long and complicated, and we tried to show as much of it as we could.
It seemed like they were okay as teammates for a little while. Maybe that also coincided with winning in 2009, but it just seemed like every time Jeter got to a place of acceptance, maybe A-Rod would do something else that was like, okay, here we go again, whether it's the PED stuff or the Michael, the Francesa debacle at the end when he got suspended, or like you name it, A-Rod's doing something that Jeter's probably looking sideways at.
Yeah. But I think we were all looking sideways at one point. You know what I mean? It's just like, this is a circus. And I think Alex has been, to his credit, open about the fact that, you know, he created a circus around himself and that, you know, a lot of it was driven by his decisions. So I don't think Derek was different than a lot of people. I think it's surprising because Derek's admitting to it now that, you know, it was a huge pain in the ass. But I think it was a huge pain in the ass for everybody involved. I mean, I'm sure when it was happening, we all had the same reaction. Whether it was the PEDs or the Francesa thing or kissing yourself in the mirror, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on. So I think Derek had the same reaction that most of us had at the time.
That's the thing. I mean, he was the polar opposite. He was the polar opposite of everything that Derek Jeter, you know, portrayed or, you know, what was important to him. Like it was all about the team and team. Gonna wrap this up a little bit, man. A couple of things. I'm curious of two things during this whole process. Did you unpack? I mentioned this at the beginning, the top here. I didn't realize. I think I know what Derek Jeter was to the New York Yankees, and I know how, you know, how big of a Yankees fan I am, and how the Yankees have played a big part in my life. Just they've been there the whole time. Did you realize that he was, or that he portrayed something different than you? Did you come out of this a little different in who he was during that time as you were watching him growing up? And then two, the second question to that is, are you now in the inner circle, or has that changed? Because, you know, once there's like one misstep and you're like, God damn, I know one misstep. And this dude's going to look at me side eye and it's going to be different. And it could happen at any moment. Are you on guard like constantly because?
Oh, no. I don't know if I'm in the inner circle or not. I think we're friends.
Circle of trust, I should say. Maybe not inner circle.
I think good. So because, you know, I was entrusted with his story and I think we represented him well. So in that sense, yes, for sure. I'm not on guard.
There you go.
I'm not going to all of a sudden trash him for no reason. You know what I mean? I'm not worried about that. But in terms of his impact, you can't really tell when you're making it. I think it's important for people to respond to it. You know, so I've gotten so many messages from people that either saw people in the film that were lost loved ones. A lot of people telling me that, you know, they lost a loved one or a friend and this reminded them of people that they care dearly about that are no longer with us. People reminiscing about New York at that time. So I don't think I could really like fathom it, or could fathom it until people started engaging with it. You know what I mean? Because everybody has such different experiences with that time and with Derek that I wouldn't have been able to grasp it. You know, I know how I felt. But again, I was also like telling a story. So I was trying to, as much as I could, to remove my fandom from it because I didn't want that to jade the story.
For sure.
But I'm just happy that people respond to it the way that they do and that it makes them happy. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that means a lot.
Well, for me, at least I'll speak for myself. Those were happy times as a child watching baseball. Those were happy times. So that's what I think a lot of people in our age range are going to feel watching that documentary. And I think you don't have to be a Yankees fan to appreciate it. I've told fans, Red Sox fans in my life, Mets fans in my life, like watch it. Like I think you'll think it's interesting. I don't think anyone's listened yet, but I'm trying, Randy. I'm trying to get people to watch this thing.
Oh no, I know a lot of Red Sox fans, Mets fans that watched it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like so do I.
So I mean we made it for everyone. We didn't make it just for Yankees fans. So 2004 is obviously very popular with Red Sox fans. Not as much.
That was a
Yankees
tough episode.
Fans.
That was a tough 15 minutes, man.
Yeah. But yeah, no, we made it for everybody because I think that was just a great time for baseball.
Yeah. It was the best.
That
2-year stretch will probably never be matched in our lifetime. But thank you.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Thank you so much for joining us. Again, awesome job on the documentary. I loved it. Thank you. I'll probably watch it again at some point. Scott, anything else you'd like to say?
No, man. Yeah, just to keep throwing some flowers this way. You did a hell of a job. I think you represented the whole, just everybody well for who grew up in that time, man. And it was definitely I don't have to tell you this, something to be very proud of. It was awesome. I can't wait to show my son when he gets a little older and can actually digest it more.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guy.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.